Director's Notes, Episode 56, Catmansor, Timepiece. Hi, and welcome to Director's Notes. I'm Marb Ell, and this is the weekly podcast dedicated to the what, how, and why of independent filmmaking. Just when I was thinking I'd maxed out on indie film podcast discoveries, of course I stumble across another worthy contender that I should have known about as it's been around since at least January as far as I can tell. The not-so-new kid on the block is the creatively named Spoiler Alert Radio, presented by Tony Panacchia and going out live across the airwaves and online as a podcast. I'll describe it as director's notes without the video and a more charming host, but you can come to your own conclusions by following the link in our show notes at directorsnotes.com. My guest today is actually a filmmaker local to me and made a brief appearance on our Digital Shorts episode if you managed to hear her over the background bar noise. Kat Mansour is a founding member of Brighton production company Animal Monday and joins me to discuss her short documentary Timepiece, which reveals the magic and unknown world of Swiss artisan watchmakers. Hi Kat, welcome to Director's Notes.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's good to get you kind of back on the show. You were on our Digital Shorts special, like briefly, in the middle of a bar.
That's right, you collared me after the first screening of the film, which was great.
Well, to settle into the interview, I always start off with the same question, which is, what is it that brought you to directing in the first place?
I used to act, and I really enjoyed it, and I got to the age of 18. I was put into drama school at 6, and I kind of realised at 18 that I'd had enough of it. So I did a degree in English and film, which is where I met my business partners, and we kind of all shared a vision in making films and going the other side of the camera. So I did a master's in TV production at Bournemouth University, and off the back of my master's piece, we made our first broadcast short documentary, and that was back in November 2002. Since then, I've been working collaboratively with Adam and Will. We started a company called Animal Monday, and yeah, we've been steadily increasing our film rate per year, and yeah, that's how I kind of got into it.
The films of yours that I've seen and looking at the Animal Monday site, you're more documentary filmmakers rather than fiction filmmakers, but you'd think, well, acting, you're already aware of the fiction side of film. You know, why is it that you went towards documentary?
I think I'd honestly had enough of fiction. I don't really know exactly why, but I think when you're put into the media very, very young and you have to perform all the time, I think I just had enough of performance, and I personally don't want to do drama. I don't think that's the same for my business partners. I think they'd like to do some more drama and music videos. But I think from my point of view, I just got immersed in kind of real life after having to play lots of different roles. I did lots of work when I was young. I did lots of TV work and film work and radio and stage. And I just think I'd got to the point where I wanted to be me and I wanted to meet other people doing real things. And yeah, I think that's kind of what put me off drama. But I think also that our documentaries have got a bit of a dramatic quality to them, especially Timepiece. We definitely try and conjure up a world. So I don't think it's as separate as documentary and drama. We definitely try to fuse some elements together.
One of the other things, as well as the work that you do with Animal Monday that I wanted to talk about, is your involvement with Vital Edge, Vital Edge AIDS. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I was working in Pakistan and then I went on to India and I met a filmmaker out in India who wanted to use cutting-edge digital production means to fundraise. So he wanted to create really beautiful films and photography. He's actually a photographer. And to take them to very kind of high-end exhibition spaces and to show people the type of things that need funding and to generate funding through those types of exhibitions. So I went and helped him produce several kind of small projects in Pakistan and India and got them funded in New York through various exhibitions.
With Vital Edge, you've got the short, but there's plans for a feature-length documentary with those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Robin Stateman is the photographer. He's a very well-known photographer, especially in New York. He is currently doing a series of photographic studies of microfinance in Africa, and the aim is for him to come up with a microfinance idea for a feature. He's got all sorts of links to people like George Soros and people that actually want to make a difference, as I say, and so he's currently in Africa looking for a feature-length idea that he wants to kind of do collaboratively with me, but I'm waiting for him really to find the right ideas at the moment.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing that you have time to do the documentaries that you create, because you're also event coordinator for Loop, which is
That's massive, actually, and that's something I've got much more of a hand in presently. Loop is a one-day digital culture festival which happens in the centre of Brighton. It happened this year for its first year. I don't know if you know Brighton. Do you know Brighton?
I live in Brighton.
Okay. Did you go?
No, I didn't. I was away, unfortunately, that weekend.
Basically, August the 18th saw one day of digital arts programming and musical programming in the centre of Brighton. So you know where the Ladyboys usually is?
Yeah.
It's just there, the big bit of green there. We had two bigger marquees there, and we had the university, and we had two areas within the university. And it's basically trying to show the breadth of digital culture, from kind of the Go team headlining one of the main areas to really left field acts like John Metcalf and his trio kind of doing a merging of violins with sampling, and all sorts of crazy stuff was happening, to be honest. We had like a digital broadband fun fair and all sorts of wonderful installations and art pieces. And yeah, it had 5,000 people on August the 18th, and it will be a yearly event. So yeah, it's been a very, very busy year for us.
I looked at Loop and was very interested, because it's a real merge of a lot of the digital arts, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I was visually creating the festival as well. So we programmed animations, film set to music. We ran a competition with shooting people to find film set to music. We had BBC New Music Network as part of it, BBC Experimental Films as part of it. We really created lots of partnerships with lots of different people doing lots of very broad and different types of things within the digital arts. So yes, it was quite an event really, and something that hasn't ever really brought together those elements before in Brighton. So it did very, very well, and the council have now given us the go-ahead for next year.
Fantastic. The film that we're focusing on today is your documentary, Timepiece. Would you be able to just tell us what Timepiece is about?
Timepiece is a film that was an original idea by myself and my business partners. It charts the work of two of the most exclusive watchmakers in the world. They're based in Switzerland in a very famous watchmaking region. It's a film about the loss, really, of artisan work. It's quite a nostalgic film. It looks at artisan skills, skills that we're losing a lot of these days with the kind of high-end technology surge that we've seen. I find it quite a sad film, because you see the work of these fantastic, very, very talented watchmakers who make one watch a year and sell them very expensively, that create every piece themselves, that lovingly give a soul to their watches. And, you know, by the end of the film, you kind of realise that they're a dying breed, and that it's a real shame, because we need people like that. We need people in the world that will dedicate their life to a craft and a skill.
One of the things that I was quite taken with when we spoke previously was the kind of circular nature almost of the documentary, that it was, you know, a documentary about constructors of time actually taking time to create time.
Exactly, yes.
Which I thought was fantastic.
It is, and I mean, it's funny actually. It could be construed as quite twee, the way that we've made it. We've built this real fantasy. Again, going back to how we're trying to make documentaries, what we've done is we've built a little bit of a fantasy world around the watchmakers. You know, they're based in Switzerland. There's no one else around. You know, one of the watchmakers is kind of older, kind of wizened watchmaker. And yeah, they kind of philosophize about time and the nature of time whilst the camera shows macro shots of the watch being constructed. It's done with diopter lenses, so you can see to kind of 0.1 of a millimeter the exact nature of their work, their craft, in real detail. The narration that goes with it is very philosophical, and it's all set within a day. So you start the film at the beginning, very, very early morning. You end the film as they're leaving to go home. So there's this kind of real notion of a day in the life of these people that construct time, but are kind of out of time at the same time. They don't like time.
You're based here in Brighton. These guys are over in Switzerland. You know, how did that connection end up getting made in the first place?
I was very lucky, actually. I know a collector of watches. And yeah, he one day showed me his watch collection under a microscope. And I was so taken with it. It's so beautiful. The mechanics are so wonderful. And I'd never worn a watch before in my life. And I just thought, that's art in a watch. And I'd never thought of that before. And I wondered how and if we could transpose that to a big screen. And I wondered what it would look like seeing one of these watches put together on a big screen, which I think we did really, really well. I mean, luckily we had a fantastic DOP and we shot it in HD cam so we could get real detail. But I think, yeah, seeing this guy's watches under a microscope and realising just how wonderful that world of craft is, which I never knew anything about, really fused all of our imaginations. And we went out there with him to do a recce and just to meet the watchmakers. We met about 8 or 10 different watchmakers and they each spoke to us and we started to just kind of freestyle and talk about time itself. And these watchmakers had never thought of time as anything more than part of their work, but they were coming out with gems, you know, just absolutely wonderful, just off the cuff gems of how they see time and how when they're looking into the watch they feel like they're in a different part of time. You know, it's just a whole new world. It's like being Alice in Wonderland is one of the quotes from the film. So this man, basically, he saw the spark of our interest in his world and he took us out there just to invite us to meet some of these incredible watchmakers.
So did he stay on board the project?
He did. Yes, he was our horological consultant, which I think is what we credited him as in the end. He stayed on board and actually we've ended up working with him to make recuts for him because he loves it. There's a whole community of people that are lovers of watches, really high-end, well-crafted watches. There's internet forums talking about the newest watch and the mechanisms. He's one of the moderators on those forums. So for him, it's just, you know, I've joked that it's kind of watch porn, but in all reality, there is a real fetishism to it, which was definitely hit a niche market, put it that way, definitely. So yeah, he's on board and he loves our work. And we're also looking for new work in that field just because, you know, we've kind of proven that we can show the passion of it rather than just the mechanics of it. Because it's a very passionate thing, this watchmaking. Watches with soul is very difficult to try and capture.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned about the recuts that you've done. Are those the Watch Realm films?
Yes. Yes, they are. So what we've done for this chap is create some Watch Realm media so that he can show other people, you know, the type of work these fantastic watchmakers do. So we've got like an A to Z of how to build a watch. It's almost like open heart surgery, of course not as gruesome or bloody, but it's very macro look at how these watchmakers construct watches, how they finish them. It's very, very detailed and there is a market for it. You know, it's not my market, but there is a very niche market for people that are very interested in that way of doing things.
Knowing that you guys are based here in Brighton and yes, that the shoot was in Switzerland, you know, I think you can kind of preempt my question. You know, yes, the organisation, how difficult, how tricky was that? Especially as we're funded under Digital Shorts, and I know the
That's
budgets
right.
for that were like 6,000.
Timepiece was shot using screen sales money. That was £6,000, which was great. Very, very, very kind of them to commission us. But it wasn't very much in terms of what we wanted to do with the film because we wanted to shoot it on HD cam and to use kind of the best diopter lenses money could buy so that we could get the macro look right. It was very, very important for us to get the detail and the beauty and to not let these watchmakers who, you know, slaved over one watch a year, to not let them down for it to look a bit shoddy and a bit crap and a bit blurry. So, with that in mind, yes, you're right, it was a very, very hard shoot for us. It was very hard budget-wise, organisation-wise. Switzerland isn't in the EU, so we had to get a carnet, which is a legal document that you have to take with you when you're shooting outside of the EU. It's quite an involved document. You need all your serial numbers sorted. And when you're kind of pulling favours, which is what we were pulling favours from Promotion Hire in London, who very kindly gave us, you know, a high-end camera for very little, and South London Filters, who were giving us their diopters and all sorts of things for very little. I mean, we were really, really helped out. But yeah, trying to get all the serial numbers on time when these people were doing you favours, well, it wasn't easy. Plus, we had two main location parts of Switzerland. It was snowing. We didn't have enough money for a 4x4 Jeep. We didn't have a proper car that could handle the snow properly, so we were skidding at points, and it was, you know, there were all sorts of things to get through, to be honest. And Switzerland is an extremely expensive country, extremely expensive. So we had quite a few hurdles to jump, to be honest. But we had a fantastic team. We had a very small team out there. There was myself. There was Will Hood, who was the sound man. We had Robin Fox, who's a fantastic DOP. And we had Orlando Julie, who was our camera assistant. So that's tiny, absolutely tiny, when you consider the setups were taking, 3 hours at a time.
How long were you over in Switzerland then?
We were there for 6 days, that's all. Again, because we'd gone out there once before, I had all the audio that I could possibly need. The treatment was so tight, we knew exactly what we wanted. In effect, and going back to this whole documentary drama thing, we'd scripted on the strength of what we'd gone out and filmed the first time round. We knew exactly where we wanted them to go. We knew what we wanted them to repeat. We knew exactly what shot. We knew we wanted it to be within a day construct, so we knew we had to get the dawn shot. We knew we had to recreate sunrise. We knew, we really knew what we were doing. It was a very heavily structured. The shoot was heavily structured, and we worked really hard. I mean, we were working 14-hour days to make sure we got every single sunrise and every single sunset we could utilise in some way or other. And also because we wanted snow. That was my dream. It had to be snowy. You know, you're in Switzerland, you're in the mountains, it's watchmaking, you have to have snow. So I prayed for snow, and I prayed and I prayed, and 2 days before we went, it snowed. So we had freshly set snow, and it was very magical from that point on, and we knew we were going to get the film, the kind of fairy tale film that we were looking for. But yeah, we were reliant on a lot of goodwill and a lot of good weather and a lot of good luck.
Knowing that you had everything planned out, you knew exactly what you wanted, how did you settle on the use of HD camera and the lenses? Did you perform lots of tests? Or
yes, Robin Fox did. Robin Fox is a National Film and Television School graduate. We spent a long time recruiting for the piece. We really wanted someone that would be kind of specific enough and technically minded enough to be able to really embrace the challenge of filming cogs, being polished. You know, someone that would really understand the wanting to find the beauty of each watch part. And he was into watches, firstly. He's extremely methodical, and he did loads of tests. And he found, the best two cameras. And he said, try and aim for those two cameras. Try and aim for these lenses. Try. And I did. And luckily, we managed to get exactly what he wanted to film it on.
Can I ask what that was?
We filmed on the HD cam Sony 790. And we used Acromat diopter lenses. I don't know the specifics of those. I know the specifics of the camera. So, yeah, it was a Sony 790 HD cam.
Knowing that, you had gone out there, you'd done your pre-shoot, when it came to the edit, did that make the edit really straightforward? Because you were more or less slotting various sections where they needed to go.
Yeah, visually, easy, I'd say. I mean, Adam edits the pieces. But I'd say visually, we were spoiled for choice. We had such beautiful, beautiful footage, and we knew that you had to start at the beginning, and then you kind of tease the audience into beginning to see inside these guys' world and then getting into the microscope. It was so obvious the way that we had to kind of put it together because we had such a tight treatment. It was the dialogue that was the pain in the butt because these guys, I mean, one of them, fantastic, fantastic guy, but his English wasn't amazing. And because I'd filmed him before and I knew what I wanted him to say, trying to get him to repeat kind of his off-the-cuff philosophical comments on the nature of time, it was really very, very funny. He took it all in very good humour, but it was very challenging. So we've got lots of breaks in dialogue, you know, where he's not able to fully remember exactly what he wants to say, and trying to make the amount of philosophical statements that we were kind of attempting to get through in the film, that was the biggest hurdle, trying to make it sound really natural and coherent and not too much of it, because, you know, you want the audience to digest stuff and you want it to be slow and you want it to really have meaning for the audience rather than just too much of it. So yeah, that was the hardest part of putting the film together. And in the end, we found that less was actually more, and we included an epilogue so that we really rammed home what the actual film was about right at the end. So, you know, they know that this is a film about the dying craft of watchmaking, and, you know, we better watch out, because every time a watchmaker dies or goes into retirement, we're losing a whole book worth of history that we're going to lose eventually if we don't watch out.
What did the watchmakers think of the film? Because I can imagine you've captured their dying craft, and this is almost like a testament to that art, and this is like a record of something that, you know, wouldn't normally be captured. I suppose it would live through their watches, but, you know, this is something else that shows how the watch was born, more or less.
Absolutely. I'll be honest, we've had grown men crying watching the film. It's really hit a nerve to the watchmakers and their fans. I can honestly say there's been two or three men that I've seen watch the film and they've turned around and just had tears streaming down their cheeks. It's a very emotional thing for these guys. And actually, it really hit a chord for them all. We travelled to Switzerland to show the watchmakers the film, and I think they really appreciated it. They appreciated it for many reasons. In effect, what we were trying to do is give them space filmically to show their passion. So, you know, you couldn't not. We made them look like, you know, film stars. They look so beautiful, and they're kind of surrounded in a beautiful Swiss landscape. So I think we've tried to do to them what they do for their craft. We've tried to make it very beautiful and very technically precise and very in time. That's something that, you know, the music that we've used, there's a real kind of rhythm to it, and it's precise and it goes on throughout the whole piece. And yeah, I think they just loved it. They loved the atmosphere. We've had so much feedback from people just saying, I never thought I'd be into a film about watches. And to be honest, I didn't, but they just found it, you know, enchanting. And that's what we try to build, this enchanting world of the watchmakers. So yeah, the watchmakers adored it. And, you know, we're firm friends. I'm hoping one day they'll give us a watch. But I don't think it will happen.
Well, I suppose you'll have to wait a year to find out if they have or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Those reactions that you've got of people saying, I never thought I'd be into a film about watches. So that goes into what we were talking about earlier about your desire when it comes to working with documentaries to be committed to projects that make a difference or that touch people.
Absolutely. It's all about that, you know. I mean, you've got, I think the strength of what we're trying to do is we want people to learn something. You know, I've learned making that project more than I ever thought I would learn from making a film about watches. You know, when my friend took me into a room to show me his watch, I never thought I'd be at the point now where I could talk about the mechanics of a tourbillon or the beauty of the people that actually create things in that way. And it's really spurred me on in my own creative practice, you know, and I'm sure it has with my business partners as well. We're really touched, and we want that feeling to be transported to other people that watch it. And that's really important to us and everything we're trying to do. You know, whether it be the film that we're making at the moment or any of our previous films, we've never wanted to make things that just kind of disappear into nothingness. We want people to be touched and to move on with a, you know, with a new sensibility or a new feeling. So yes, that's very, very important to us, very important to our ethic as a company.
Quite recently, Timepiece played at Palm Springs Festival. Did you manage to go there? Did you, you know?
Do you know what
the reactions were? So was the audience reaction similar to what you'd found?
Absolutely. I was very nervous, actually. It was our first public screening. We'd only ever had the screening that you came to. So I then kind of ended up in California amidst a very big film community out there. And I was very nervous sitting through the whole film thinking, what are these Americans going to think of it? They're going to think I'm crazy. You know, what's all of this? But actually, it went down an absolute storm. We had a question and answer session after, and I just had question after question about these watchmakers and about, you know, art and, you know, the craft of it all. And people were really riled up about it, and so much so that I've had email after email from different people, different programmers from different festivals kind of emailing me saying, oh, we've heard about your film and we've met people that have seen it and have said it's really very special. And it's been a lovely, lovely response. I couldn't really have wished for better feedback from people. And now it's going to Austin Festival. It's been chosen from 300 short documentaries down to 8, so it's in competition. Austin's another Academy qualifier. And yeah, we're just kind of getting it out there now, so we'll see what happens. I mean, just this morning I've had San Diego Film Festival programmer email me to say that he'd heard about the film and could I send him a screener, and the same with the Sundance programmer. I met him out there and he said that he'd heard about the film, so it's gone off there. We'll see what happens, you know, watch this space. But yes, we've had very, very positive response and we're very, very happy. Although it didn't get into London, and I'm very irritated by that, but you can't have everything.
You mentioned that you're currently working on film. Is that Here's Johnny?
It is.
That's a documentary looking at Johnny Hinkleton.
Yes, his name is Johnny Hicklinton. He's a comic book artist. He's our art terror wing to Animal Monday, really. He's a fantastic man that Adam has known for years. He's a comic book artist, first and foremost. Mustn't lose that. He draws for Judge Dredd, or he has done for the last 20 odd years. He's Maverick. He's an extremely interesting character. And on top of that, about 6 or 7 years ago, he found out that he had multiple sclerosis. We started filming him about 5 years ago, just because he's crazy. He's very electric on camera, and we didn't really know what we were going to be doing with it. This is when we first started Animal Monday, and we were kind of looking for things to do, and we were kind of fresh out of uni, and, you know, we thought it was going to be easy to conquer the media world, but yeah, that proved difficult. But we started filming Johnny and started to see, you know, some real changes in him over a couple of years. He started losing the ability to walk very easily. He started to take very strange alternative therapies, because there's nothing really for multiple sclerosis. There's very little. But yet he really thought he could beat the disease. So we kind of started to make the film just to see whether or not Johnny Hicklinton could beat the disease. And kind of through his art and his artistic practice, which is still the only thing, you know, that's so prevalent in his life, we really thought he could. And I suppose in the fifth year, he can't walk anymore. He's in a very different place now. And we're nearing the end of the film, which has been a real emotional journey. And yes, it's been fantastic. We've been funded by the Wellcome Trust, Channel 4, BritDoc. And it's going to be a fantastic film, a real journey, both kind of artistically, it's really art-led, but also emotionally, because you see kind of someone's emotional reawakening, because, you know, I think he didn't realise kind of what he really had until he got MS. And he kind of could see his life, you know, the pain of life, I suppose, in front of him. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a very, very beautiful film. It's an hour long. We're hoping to get it off to a slam dance. We're hoping to finish it in the next month. It's got a heavy post-production schedule because there's so much art. It's framed within a comic book, a very dark horror comic book. It's quite gruesome, to be honest, you know. Johnny doesn't pull any punches, but it's a wonderful film, and Johnny's fantastic. I think he's a real example for people, you know, when the chips are down, how to not let them get you too down, how to really try and fight it. And he's a fighter, and that's the best thing about the film.
Yeah. Where's the best place for people to find out more about Animal Monday and your projects?
We've got a website, www.animalmonday.co.uk. It's a very simple website. It shows 2-3 minute clips of different things we've done, we're doing, we want to do. We've got all sorts of things we want to get funded. We've got all sorts of crazy projects that we want to take forward. But yeah, that's the best place, really. And obviously I'm Kat, that's K-A-T, and you can email me at animalmonday.co.uk. And yeah, that's the best place to really get in contact with us.
Thank you for talking to me and hiding out in your soundproof booth.
It's useful, actually. I'm quite enjoying it in here. I might stay in here today. No, thanks for your time.
If you've happened to see any films you think we should be discussing on the show, get in touch at directorsnotes@googlemail.com or via Skype at directorsnotes, all one word, and we'll try and track down the directors for an interview. You can also post a comment on directorsnotes.com to let us and our guests know what you think of the films and interviews each week. Director's Notes is released on a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 license and supported by Screen South and the UK Film Council. All of the materials remain the property of our guests. If you'd like to help prevent Director's Notes going the same way as the Watchmakers, be sure to tell a friend, blog about us, or leave a review in iTunes. Every year there are hundreds of great films of all types from around the world that don't get the exposure they deserve. It's our job to make obscurity a thing of the past, one film at a time.